Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Stan, what's most concerning about what happened out there?
That we got crushed at both ends.
Coming off a team meeting and all of the...
Like I said before, that stuff means nothing. It's what you do on the court. Talking's easy. I have nothing to say. I mean, it was a disgusting performance by all of us, me included. I mean, it was unprofessional, embarrassing, humiliating, whatever you want to say. It was terrible. When we went into the Washington game on Friday night, we were the number two defensive team in the league. And now we have three games where we can't stop anybody. I don't have an explanation for that.
It's unacceptable the way we're playing right now, you know, taking 30-point losses night after night. You know, this is not the team that I know that we are. It's tough, man. It's tough. Tough to be a part of, tough to play in the game, tough to watch. You can't even give you a legit answer to that question. It's just really hard to be a part of this type of situation that we're in.
We're beaten, but we need to wake up soon. We talked about how we needed to play defense, how the ball needed to hop. I guess ball movement and promote defense. So I just tried to help do my part, but unfortunately we just didn't do anything on defense end.
I didn't know there was any issue. Now, the ice was not good this morning, but sometimes that happens when you go on wet ice. It's not an abnormal thing for the ice not to be great during morning skates. And then I just found out after a meeting, so about 6 o'clock.
It was bad this morning, but sometimes we step on a little bit too early.
I don't let it freeze, and we thought that was the issue.
I mean, at the end of the day, you have to respect those guys' decisions, but you still have to, it has its ups and downs. You have to look at it like, you know, your teammates are really counting on you, and you know you want to be there for them, or, you know, you're trying to secure your future. But if I had to do it all over again, I would play again. I'm not going to even sit here and lie to you. I would still play in the game.
Those two guys especially are unassailable in this decision because they're running backs who played much of the year in the case of McCaffrey, or all of the year in the case of Fournette, with leg injuries. And so the fact that they fought through those injuries for their teams when they were in conference and national races means that if they think that they need to take this bowl game off, I'm fine with it. Now, if they were healthy, I think players have to be careful about sitting out a bowl game when they're healthy, because that might be sending a message to NFL teams that they don't love the game. Guys that love the game have to be dragged off the field.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
I need to hear that last little clip one more time. As we begin this afternoon, right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, we are Toledo's sports leader. A lot of meat on that bone that you just heard there in the montage, and I want to focus on the tail end of it. Trevor Maddich of ESPN following Willis McGahee on players skipping their bowl games to get ready for the draft. I want to hear that part from Trevor Maddich again, because we're going to get into this today. You and me and Cushlin and Bill Landis, Buckeye beat writer, and anybody else who wants a piece of this, because it's really... You know, at a time when there's not much going on, baseball's done. There's no football game last night. Well, there was, but it was, I mean, Washington didn't show up. But that's it, just the one Monday night game. The NBA is just kind of in lull land. Everybody's talking about college football players skipping their bowl game to get ready for the draft. Leonard Fournette and Christian McCaffrey. I want to hear that Trevor Maddich clip one more time. Please, Jim Cushlin.
Fought through those injuries for their teams when they were in conference and national races means that if they think that they need to take this bowl game off, I'm fine with it. Now, if they were healthy, I think players have to be careful about sitting out a bowl game when they're healthy, because that might be sending a message to NFL teams that they don't love the game. Guys that love the game have to be dragged off the field.
That last line is exactly the part that I want to talk about. If you love the game, you have to be dragged off the field. What did Christian McCaffrey do in his last Stanford football game? Somebody tell me that. What did Christian McCaffrey do in his last game? They played Rice, I should say, on November 26th, and they won 41-17, I believe it was, 41-17. I want to look, in fact, not just the last game, but let's look at the last month of games, because this is exactly what we're going to be talking about today. And I understand the point Trevor Maddich made. I get it. He's basically, in essence, saying that Christian McCaffrey has been injured, so therefore, in order to make sure he doesn't get more injured, thereby putting his own future and his livelihood in jeopardy, well, then maybe he has a right to sit out. So let's see how the injured Christian McCaffrey played in the last month of games. On November 5th, he played against Oregon State, carried 32 times for 199 yards and a touchdown. Against Oregon the next week, carried 17 times for 135 yards and three touchdowns, caught 5 for 52 along the way. Against Cal on the 19th, he carried 31 times for 284 monstrous yards. That's 9.2 a carry if you're scoring at home. And three touchdowns, caught 4 for 22. And then against Rice in the season ender, he carried 30 times for 204 more. That's 6.8 per. And he also had two catches for 23 yards there. And a touchdown. Doesn't look like an injured guy to me. Doesn't look like he's injured. Now, you may say, well, he was. He missed a game back in October against Notre Dame. Sure enough, he did. But to say because a guy had an injury in his last year, I can't say his senior year, his junior in Christian McCaffrey's case, that means he's thus injured and thus unable to play in the bowl game, I call bullcrap. Christian McCaffrey is not injured. Christian McCaffrey was injured. Since that injury, he came back to carry the ball 21, 23, 32, 17, 31, and 30 times. I don't think they're giving the ball an average of about 20, if I threw all those together, an average of about 27 times a game over the next six games to a guy who's hurt. I don't think they're giving the ball to a guy who's injured 27 times a game. He's fine. He's ready to play. He is choosing not to play for fear of getting re-injured. And what was that last part of what Trevor Maddich had to say again? Give that to me again, Jim Cushion.
They don't love the game. Guys that love the game have to be dragged off the field.
Bam. Bam. That is exactly what I'm talking about. And I got to tell you, I'm not loving it. Welcome to the extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. This is kind of the defining sports topic of the day. Really, really enjoyed a lot of the opinions offered this morning on Mike and Mike. If you listen to Mike and Mike on a regular basis right here on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket, which you should. You probably heard some of the guys, and I want to get into it with you, and I want to get as many opinions on this as possible, and I certainly have my own. And while I don't want to poison the well water, if you will, and make everybody's opinion be based on what I have to say, I am going to offer mine. And I really do want...
So we got into...
No, I don't want to hear from you right now. But I really do want to hear from you and your own personal opinion. Don't let mine color it, but I do have to get mine out there. I don't like the trend that this is setting. I don't like the trend that Leonard Fournette and Christian McCaffrey are starting now, which essentially is one that says, I'm not going to risk my financial future in the NFL by playing a meaningless bowl game for my team that I supposedly was giving my heart and soul to in exchange for a whole hell of a lot of money in college scholarships, room, board, and the like. I've got a big problem with that because the trend isn't going to be just guys sitting out the bowl game. You know doggone well. Let's say, for example, that a surefire first-round NFL draft pick who's had a monster year, and they've got a showdown in their second-to-last regular season game, okay? Second-to-last regular season game, and they're in the hunt for the college football playoff. And they lose that second-to-last regular season game, and now they know they're not going to be in the college football playoff. There's nothing they can do in the regular season's final game to get them there based on the way the rankings look and where they are. What is to stop the next star from saying, yeah, I'm not going to be playing in that regular season finale or the bowl game? What's to stop them from walking it back a little further? Yeah, well, you know, I've played 7 great games this year out of our 11, and I've had a monster season, and I've been kicking butt, and I know what my draft status looks like. I'm going to go top five, top eight, top ten. The only thing playing in these last five regular season games can do to me is injure me and hurt my stock. And if you don't think that's where this is headed, all you got to do is look at last season. Leonard Fournette, the All-American running back at LSU, was questioning, if you recall this, we talked about it, whether or not he should even suit up last year because he's a top five pick. He was believed to be better than Ezekiel Elliott last season, not the one that's currently coming to a close with bowl games and playoffs. He was believed by many to be better than Ezekiel Elliott, who all he is the NFL's rookie of the year and possible MVP. And there was talk about whether or not he could hurt his draft stock and himself, his body, if by playing in this game or by playing this season. And what did Leonard Fournette do? He ended up playing, and he ended up getting injured a little bit, didn't have a great season. And now he went ahead and played this season. Again, it was kind of a down season, one that was down for all of LSU, to be fair, in his defense here, because, you know, they ended up firing Les Miles and then hiring Ed Orgeron and the whole nine yards. But essentially, Leonard Fournette is doing now what he wanted to do last year, and that's shut it down, just save myself for NFL football. If you don't think this is going to lead to guys moving it up further and further to the last game of the year, second last game of the year, third last game of the year, oh, I tweaked my hamstring in the fourth to last game of the year, I'm not even going to bother running on this sucker for the next 3-4 weeks. I'm going to prepare for the draft. I'm going into rehab and I'm getting in draft mode. I've got a problem with what this says about college football by these guys. And Leonard Fournette, by the way, Leonard Fournette has a message. He's got a message for everybody. And he put it on Instagram. Or maybe this is Twitter. I guess this is Twitter. He's got a message for anybody who thinks it's wrong, like me, for him to sit out the bowl games to get ready for the NFL. His message is posted on Twitter with a picture of himself and his 2-year-old daughter standing at his feet. And I don't know what the hand symbol is, to be quite honest with you. I really don't know what, it's some funky signal that looks like John Wall used to get accused of when he would flash gang signs on the NBA court after making big shots and whatnot. I don't know if it's a gang sign. I wouldn't think so. He's got his little girl there who looks very, very cute, by the way. Just an adorable little girl. A little bow on her head. Anyway, Leonard Fournette says in his Instagram or Twitter post, I guess it's Twitter, his Twitter post, only person I owe something to. Which he spelled wrong, by the way, because he spelled it T-O-O-O. College student, by the way. Yeah. Only person I owe something to. So he's basically saying, I don't owe LSU fans a damn thing. I don't owe Ed Orgeron a damn thing. I don't owe my teammates a damn thing. I owe nobody anything. The only thing I do owe is my daughter, his 2-year-old daughter, Lyric, who was born early in 2015. And that's it. That's his message. Do you agree? Because I do not. I do not. There are a lot of players who might be, maybe not Leonard Fournette, but might be second-round draft picks who play for LSU going into this year's April draft, or next year's technically since we're still in December. There are a lot of guys who might be second-round draft picks whose financial futures are at stake. Third-round draft picks whose financial futures are at stake. Hell, Dak Prescott, the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys, was a fourth-round draft pick. He's going to make a lot of money. And all of these guys who are going to be middle-round draft picks, many of whom are still going to be NFL stars, are playing in their bowl game. And maybe they've got kids. Maybe they owe something to them, too. But they also owe something to the program, the school, that is offered to give them so very much for their futures. What if Leonard Fournette breaks his leg in 6 places during a workout or during his first game of his rookie year and he can't play anymore? That education he got for free is supposed to be something that is of huge value to him, that they gave him to play football for them. But him stepping out and saying, nope, not doing it, going to the workouts, essentially says, I don't care about my contract with the school. And the same thing is true of Christian McCaffrey. Christian McCaffrey is an absolute stud, like Leonard Fournette. He's going to have probably a very, very strong NFL career. He's a multi-talented kid. He's done everything right. And he has decided the same thing, despite being fully healthy and his team on a five-game winning streak, six out of their last seven to wrap up this season, talking about Stanford Cardinal at 9-3, instead of finishing the season strong at the Sun Bowl, right? Isn't that where they play the Sun Bowl coming up against North Carolina? I think it's the Sun Bowl. I don't really keep track of a lot of these games because I don't find them particularly useful. But the schools do. The conferences do. The networks do. The advertisers do. And Christian McCaffrey is going to rob that game of one of its two biggest stars, the other one being North Carolina quarterback Mitch Trubisky, who might be a first-round or top-five pick in next year's draft as well. Trubisky's playing. So I've got a little bit of a problem with all of this because I'm afraid I'm going to get hurt. I know it is a concern, but guess what? There is no guarantee when you get into your first preseason game you won't get hurt. There's no guarantee you won't get hurt in any number of ways between now and the time you get a contract or a big contract beyond your rookie contract. This kind of thing is what the game is about. It is a game of high risk and high reward. You play hard in a very physical, demanding, violent game, and you do everything you can to succeed and excel in exchange for the opportunity to show your wares to the NFL. By the way, Stanford gave Christian McCaffrey the chance to make millions. LSU gave Leonard Fournette the chance to make millions. Jim Cushlin, what bowl game were the Ohio State Buckeyes in last year?
They were in the, weren't they in the Fiesta Bowl?
They were in the Fiesta Bowl. Who was their opponent?
Notre Dame, I think.
And there were probably a good 15, 18, 20 NFL draft picks in that game from the two teams?
Yeah, a bunch more from Ohio State in this case, but yeah, that's probably a rough estimate, good number.
Did Ezekiel Elliott sit that game out, or did he play? I'm trying to remember. Did he play in that bowl game that was not a playoff game, that was not for a chance at a national championship, that was, in essence, a postseason exhibition game, or did he sit that out?
No, he played.
How do you do in the NFL draft? Number three overall, I think. Was it three?
Yeah.
Wasn't Zeke three overall?
And this is, of course, in the world where running backs aren't supposed to go that high anymore.
That's exactly right. That's very, very true. My point being, can you imagine how that game would have looked if Ezekiel Elliott had said, yeah, you know what? I'm going to go into the draft, and I'm probably going to be a top five guy, which he was. I'm probably going to be a top five guy. So, yeah, I'm going to go ahead and sit out the game against Notre Dame. What would Ohio State fans have said? What would Urban Meyer have said? What would Ezekiel Elliott's teammates have said? He was fourth, by the way. Joey Bosa was third. Oh, by the way, did Joey Bosa sit out that game?
Nope.
I think he played, didn't he?
He did.
What if Joey Bosa and Ezekiel Elliott said, hey, Herb, coach, love you, brah. Made a great run. Won a championship in 2014 in the first year that they had the college football playoffs. Didn't quite make it back to it this year, but it was a nice run. But you know what? Go play the Fiesta Bowl against Notre Dame without me. Give my backup a chance to make a name for himself because I'm outie. I got a future. I got a future to worry about. I got a draft coming up in about 4 months, and I got to train for that, and I don't want to worry about getting hurt in an exhibition game. I think a lot of people would have thought a lot less. Matter of fact, while we're at it, Eli Apple went number 10 overall to the Giants. Taylor Decker went number 16 overall. What are we talking about here? We're talking about first-round draft picks, all of whom knew they were going to be first-round draft picks. A lot of very talented guys who said we're going to play football because our season isn't over until our season is over. And I don't like what McCaffrey and Fournette are doing here. And if you don't think this is going to spread next year because agents are going to get their hooks into guys trying to say, you know what, as soon as you declare your college career over, you can sign with me. Get it over with now because you don't want to get hurt and cost yourself money. It has happened. Guys have been hurt in bowl games. We know. It's a terrible thing. but you don't stop playing a game for fear of being hurt. Otherwise, you would never have started playing that game in the first place. Agents are going to get into their ears. They're going to not play games. And then eventually, like I said, hey, you know what? We lost two out of our last three games. We got two regular season games left. Then we're going to some mid-major crap bowl. Guess what? Not going. Not playing the last two games, not going. Coach, it's been fun. It's been real. I'm out. But by the way, still Wildcat for life. And I'm just picking a school there. Still a Badger for life. Yeah, really not for life. Not when you're not going to play for your team in the bowl game. Curtis in Toledo. You're on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. Let's get you up and on the air before we get to our friend Bill Landis covering the Ohio State Buckeyes on this issue. Hey, Curtis, what do you think of these guys not playing their last games?
In my opinion, I personally believe that the decision's up to them. You're stating that they shouldn't be allowed or they should play that final game. The fact that they're being projected so highly in the draft is because they've dedicated those first 2 years or 3 years or even 4 years in some cases, blood, sweat, and tears to even get that high of a projection in the draft. They've given them everything that they've had to give. Every single thing
Hold on. Wouldn't you agree, though, that the same thing is true in reverse, that the school that they're playing for offered them that scholarship and gave them that platform and gave them that national stage and gave them that spotlight that's going to make them a millionaire. Don't they owe them? But what we're talking about is one game, two games, three games.
We're talking about one game, maybe two, maybe three, maybe even four, like you said.
Yeah.
Four games out of their whole college career. Four games. After they just dedicated blood, sweat, and tears for 2, 3, 4 years. We're talking about four games.
But what are they, what are they dedicating blood, sweat, and tears for? To the school or to themselves and their NFL prospects? Because if the answer is to the, hold on, before you answer, if they were dedicating themselves and their blood, sweat, and tears the way you're describing it to the school, then they would finish it out and play in the bowl game in the last few games or whatever. But if they're skipping those things, then you know they were never in it for the glory of the school. They were in it to prepare themselves for the NFL.
Did the school still get the glory when they were playing those games because they were doing so well? Regardless of whatever reason they're doing it for, the school's still receiving glory.
Does the school get the glory in the bowl game when all of the star players aren't there?
What bowl game are we talking about? The glory in the U.S. military bowl? What glory is there in the Sun Bowl? Hold on, I don't want to talk about one specific bowl.
We're talking about the precedent that this sets.
We can talk about all of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we can talk about all of them. Let me ask you this.
Because, yeah. I don't know, how much money do they pay out for the Fiesta Bowl, Kush? Do you know?
I'd have to look that up. Give me a second.
All right, they pay, as you know, I'm sure, Curtis, they pay, I don't know, I want to say $6-8 million per school for their conference when you go to one of the major bowls like Fiesta Bowl, Rose Bowl, or whatever, right?
Right.
And the reason they do that, where do they get that money from? They get it from the advertisers and the networks because the networks, of course, carry the games, and they sell them to the advertisers because everybody wants to see, you know, for example, they want to see Ezekiel Elliott against that rock-solid Notre Dame defense in the Fiesta Bowl. That's why the millions of dollars flow. So,
right.
Would you have been okay with the millions of dollars being paid to Ohio State to have a backup running back play because Ezekiel Elliott sat it out, knowing full well that once Elliott and Bosa and maybe Apple are all out of that game, this is all hypothetical.
Perfect. Let's use Ohio State.
Yeah. Would you have been okay with those guys? Hold on. The money that is being paid out is to see the Ohio State Buckeyes outstanding players play, not their backups play, because a bunch of other dudes bagged it before the season ended because they got a draft to worry about. Would you have been okay with that?
First of all, absolutely, because Ohio State has a bunch of five stars sitting behind every one of those guys that I'm anxious to see, that I've been hearing and listening to get recruited for 2 or 3 years before they even went to Ohio State. I'd love to see those guys on the field.
You want to see them cut their teeth for the first time in the Fiesta Bowl against a top 10 team?
Why not?
Because that's not how
they
hold on.
They're playing top-notch competition.
Hold on.
Let me finish real quick. They're playing top-notch competition. They're playing Notre Dame in the Fiesta Bowl. How good is Mike Weber? I don't know.
Doesn't matter. Here's the thing. how and why did Ohio State get extended the invitation to the Fiesta Bowl? Did the Fiesta Bowl committee invite Ohio State to come and play to see the backups, or did they invite Ezekiel Elliott, Eli Apple, and Joey Bosa to play in the Fiesta Bowl? That's the team that got that ranking, not the team of backups, not the team of guys who might be five-star guys and turn into great players down the line in their college careers as well. But they didn't earn the spot there.
I'm not arguing with you whether the Fiesta Bowl wants to see the main guys. I'm sure they do, and that's who they paid for. I understand
Bingo.
That.
That's
your
my
question,
point.
Your
that's
question
my
to point. Me, your question to me was, am I okay with these guys missing a game, two, three, or four? I'm absolutely fine with it, because the years prior for them to earn that draft stock, they busted their booties, busted their behinds. They did everything they can. And whether it was for themselves or the school, the school still received money for them playing those years. The school still sold tickets. The school still benefited regardless of what their reason was, whether it was for themselves or the school. It doesn't make any difference.
Okay.
The school
right.
still benefits regardless.
My point is, Curtis, I got your opinion, brother. Thanks for the call. Let me get Drew and Toledo real quick before we take a timeout and get to Bill Landis, too. And see what. And by the way, I'm going to throw this out there just so nobody thinks I'm picking on the Buckeyes for any reason whatsoever. Let's make this one current. If Jabril Peppers and Jake Butt and Jordan Lewis – and is Lewis even a junior? Is he coming out next year? I'm not positive. I'm just trying to pick some of the best players. If three of the All-American players and you know, pick another guy from Michigan did not go down to play in the Orange Bowl, nobody's going to watch Michigan. Nobody's going to watch to see this team and see how they do against Florida State if all of the best players. What if the running back for Florida State, Dalvin Cook. What if he decided, no, you know what, I got the NFL waiting, so there's no Peppers, there's no Cook, there's no Butt, there's no Lewis, that kind of thing. Does anybody watch that game, and do the millions and millions of dollars are spent to air that game essentially get wasted? And the answer would be yeah, because these guys have made a promise to their schools that they'll play all of the games before they leave for the NFL.
Bob, real quick, you guys, the money you were asking about, it's about 18-ish million, depending on which of these big bowls in the new year, six. So it's around 15 to 20 million, depending on the bowl.
And there is not one of those networks or advertisers that would commit that kind of money to those teams if they knew they were bringing their backups because the stars were waiting for the draft. And that's where we're headed, because I think this is just the tip of a very large iceberg. Drew, I didn't mean to cut on your time, brother. Go ahead.
No, hey, no, not a problem. I think it's a way bigger issue. I think it starts at the high school level where you know, you got these websites like ESPN, Top 300, you got the Rivals, you got all these recruiting rankings, and you're giving, and then you got Mel Kiper out there with his big board, and you're giving all of these kids entitlement, and you're making them feel special, and you know, I'm sorry, but you signed up to play football. You better play all those games. And if I'm an NFL scout, and I don't care how talented you are, your character is brought into question to me. If you're going to sit out a game, you're going to bail on your teammates, your brothers, that you went out there and you fought through 2 days with, and, you know, you went through all these struggles with, you're going to bail on your brothers? If I'm an NFL scout, I bring your character into question. And that, to me, says a lot about a guy, you know, if he's willing to just bail on his teammates.
Well, yeah, you know what, Drew, let's do? Let's take that to the NFL level. Now, the argument here would be for Fournette McCaffrey, for example, is, hey, we're going to make millions in the NFL. If we get hurt in this meaningless game and costs us money, well, then that's not justified. So let's take that to the next level. Hold on. Let's take that to the next level. I'm in the last year of my contract. I'm going to be a free agent. I'm about to cash in on a $50 million deal with somebody next year, and I'm playing on a 7-7 team, and we got two games to go, and we're out of the playoff race. You know what? Same thing I did in college. My knee hurts. My back is sore. I stubbed my toe. I'm not playing these last two games and jeopardizing my $50 million payday that's coming to me by getting hurt in the last two games of meaningless football for a non-playoff team. That's what you could foresee happening.
Well, that's a termination of your contract. As far as I'm concerned, if you're in the NFL, you know, fund them. You don't want to do that, you don't get paid.
Well, but here's the thing. All they got to do is fake the injury. All they got to do is say, no, just it hurts. You know, my back is sore. Sorry. I mean, I'll be fine.
I'm just using this as an example of a high-profile player that got injured in one of the game's biggest stage. Willis McGahee had one of the most devastating knee injuries I've ever seen in the national championship game.
Yep.
He had a pretty illustrious NFL career, made a bunch of money. Not being soft. And that's what it is. These guys are soft.
You heard what Willis McGahee said even after the fact. What did he say? We had it in the montage today. Willis McGahee said that even knowing what happened to me, I would still play in that game. I think the biggest problem
I have with it is you're bailing on your brothers, and that to me is just an absolute atrocity. You know, you take it one step further. You know, somebody in the Marine Corps, or for instance, you know, you're out there on the front line. You know, I'm gonna go ahead and sit this firefight out, guys, and you know. And again, that's an extreme thing, but still, yeah. don't bail on your brothers and your family.
That's a great call. Football teams are a family.
Thanks for taking my call,
Drew. Great call. Great points all the way around. Let me get a timeout here. We're going to talk to Bill Landis, who covers the Ohio State Buckeyes. We'll run some of these hypotheticals past him coming up after we tell you once again about the Buckeye Store and More, the College and Pro Superstore. It's got your Christmas specials in the store right now. 14% off of everything, whether you're shopping for somebody on your Christmas list or for yourself. You go to the Buckeye Store and More. It is the largest store in Ohio dedicated to Ohio State gear, featuring Nike for all of their teams, so you know it's great quality stuff. Whether you want Scarlet and Gray for the Bucks or Michigan, Michigan State, Notre Dame, Bowling Green, Toledo, or even the Detroit Tigers, they've got apparel, gift, and novelty items for everybody on your list, including yourself. 14% savings off everything now through Christmas in honor of the 14 Big Ten teams who have had an outstanding season, plus 50 to 75% savings on doorbuster items at the Buckeye Store and More in Sylvania, Starlight Plaza, 5700 Monroe. You can't miss it. Look for Big Brutus on the Roof at the Buckeye Store and More.
6-5 The Ticket.
I mean, at the end of the day, you have to respect those guys' decisions, but you still have to, it has its ups and downs. You have to look at it like, you know, your teammates are really counting on you, and you know you want to be there for them, or, you know, you're trying to secure your future. But if I had to do it all over again, I would play again. I'm not going to even sit here and lie to you. I would still play in the game.
Wow. Wow. Willis McGahee. Even if I knew I was going to have my knee destroyed 18 different ways, I mean, that was a bad one. That was a bad one in that championship game, and I knew it was going to affect my draft status. Boy, oh boy, I'd still play in the game. That's the biggest story right now in college football. It's not the championships or anything else. It's Leonard Fournette saying, I'm not playing in that bowl game. You kidding me? Why should I put myself on the line? The only thing I got to worry about now is my daughter and my draft status, how much money I can make to support her. Christian McCaffrey, Stanford superstar, same thing. Nope, not doing it. Got no business, no reason to play in this thing. If you think this is isolated and you don't think it's going to spread, well, I think you better think twice about that. Is it the right thing to do? Joining us now, Bill Landis, who covers the Ohio State Buckeyes, who will be participating in the national semifinals coming up at the end of the year. Joining us right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Hey, Bill, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good, man. Appreciate you kicking this around with us for a little while. All right, so you know the story, and you know this goes back for me, Bill, to Leonard Fournette before the 2015 season when there was, I'm this good, I know my draft stock, I'm going to be a top three pick anyway, maybe I'll just sit out last year, and which was a stunning statement. I mean, it just kind of spoke of a lot of cockiness, but you know, we also know that this is what the experts were telling him, that he was going to be that good, and he got injured a little bit, got banged up a little bit this year too. Did not really have the type of Heisman-warranted season that he wanted in either season. And so now he's saying, all right, I went ahead and played the years, but I'm not playing in this final bowl game. And then Christian McCaffrey follows suit. You okay with this?
I am perfectly okay with it. I guess I see why people would not be. Like, I'm a college football fan just like everyone else. I want to see the best players play a matchup, and I forget what bowl LSU is playing in, but they're playing Louisville, and a matchup of Leonard Fournette and Lamar Jackson would be awesome.
Yeah.
But Leonard Fournette, he's making a business decision, and I know that people don't want to hear that in college athletics, but like, that guy's been ready to play in the NFL for 2 years, and he played college because he had to. So I'm perfectly fine with him making this decision. I don't know whether or not the LSU teammates are okay with it. We know Christian McCaffrey's teammates have come out in support of him, a lot of them. So I think that in this situation, it's a personal decision, and that person is who matters most. People who also matter are the teammates and the coaches, and if they're okay with it, then who are we as college football fans and people who enjoy the game to criticize a guy who's making a very important decision for the future of his family and his own future?
Yeah, and you just mentioned some other guys whose futures are also on the line here, including the head coaches. Now, this is one of those really weird things, is there's two sides to this story. We know that coaches who are coaching bowl teams, who get hired to go to bigger programs, you know, at some of the stepping school type of programs, like, for example, Houston with Tom Herman, who has already left Houston and is working and recruiting for Texas. They get to leave, so you'd think if they get to leave before the Bulls, well, then why can't the players too? But on the flip side, we all know that a lot of coaches' resumes are marked by and enhanced by bowl victories. You know, how many teams, as you're being evaluated as for a potential job later on, how many seasons did you have with bowl-eligible teams, and how many bowls did you win? And if you can't take your players that you coached to those bowl games and coach them in the bowl games, and then you lose, that can negatively impact a coach's future, let alone, as you pointed out, his teammates who want to go into these bowl games and win as well, particularly the seniors who may never have another opportunity and those who are not NFL ready and whose careers are coming to an end right now.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose that's true, more so with the players. Like, I'm not one to ever really feel bad for coaches who make millions of dollars to coach a game in which the players don't get paid. But for the guys on the team, like you mentioned, seniors who want to go out with a victory, this does impact them. And I would hope that when Leonard Fournette makes a decision, you know, ultimately it's his, but he should have that conversation with his teammates. And even if it's not asking for permission, at least letting them know that, hey, this is happening. Like, it's no hard feelings on my end. I'm doing this for my future, but I guess I do have a little bit of sympathy for the guys on that team who aren't NFL players, who were playing their last college football game in this bowl game and will be negatively impacted because a guy like Leonard Fournette or Christian McCaffrey is that good that it has a tangible effect on the outcome of the game.
Yeah, and that to me is the issue here. You know, you mentioned Fournette against Lamar Jackson, right? That's a dream matchup for anybody who likes football. You want to watch that. I would say right. The same thing about Stanford or North Carolina. Mitch mm-hmm. Trubisky against Christian McCaffrey. I mean, two easily, you know, two first-round draft picks. Maybe, you know, Trubisky's case might be a top-five pick. Some say he might be the best quarterback to be taken. And McCaffrey has done everything for Stanford. Is going to be a very, very good NFL player. That's another one. And I bring that up because, you know, the networks pay a lot of money for these bowl games to air these games. And the advertisers who are spending all the money with the networks are paying a lot of money as well. And the reason why is they expect a certain number of viewers to be watching to see, you know, Christian McCaffrey, Mitch Trubisky, Leonard Fournette, Lamar Jackson, and on down the line. If they're not going to see him, they're probably feeling like, we kind of paid for something we're not getting here. We're getting backups for a game that we wanted to see with superstars.
Yeah, this is all really murky territory in my mind, because you're talking about people losing money because athletes are making a decision to, like, actually benefit off their talent for the first time in their life. So I see your point, I suppose. Like, maybe not as many people are going to tune in to the Sun Bowl because Christian McCaffrey is not playing and Mitch Trubisky is, but that's not Christian McCaffrey's problem. Like, he's not paid by anyone to play college football. He sees an opportunity here to maximize his value, which is why I don't have a problem with it. These guys are blessed with incredible talents to play professional football and make a lot of money, and they don't have a lot of mileage on their bodies. You know, there's a shelf life here, especially as it pertains to football. And they've seen, you know, even last year in the Fiesta Bowl with Ohio State, Jalen Smith, who people thought was the best player in that draft, had a devastating knee injury on a very routine play in the beginning of that game and saw his draft status suffer a lot because of that one injury and that freak play. And it just goes to show you that anything can happen at any time. And if you're nervous about that, then by all means, like, save yourself and go make your money, because you've earned it. You've played college football for so long, and like, especially the guys like Fournette and McCaffrey, given so much to the universities and put their bodies on the line, that if they want to make this decision and go make their money, I find it hard to fault them for that.
Bill Landis is our guest. He covers the Ohio State Buckeyes for the Northeast Ohio Media Group, and we're talking about players leaving early, or not early, but not playing their bowl games. What about the inevitable, Bill? And this is one of the other problems that I have with this. It's not necessarily these two particular guys, but the precedent that this is going to set. Because now follow my line of reasoning here. You're playing on a, let's say you're a 9-2 football team and you lose your second to last game of the regular season and you're out of the championship hunt now that you've got three losses. You're not going to the playoffs. You're going to play in the final game of the regular season and then the bowl game, and then your career is going to be over. What's to stop the next guy from saying, you know, that final game of the regular season means nothing. The bowl game means nothing. I'm going to chop it after 11 games. And then maybe the year after that, somebody says, "Man, we're 6-4, or maybe we're 6-3, and we got three regular season games left. We ain't going to any good bowls. We're not going to the conference championship. I'm going to shut it down here. I already know my draft stock, so I'm going to shut it down 9 games into my 12-game last season." Does that concern you that we got guys who essentially are going to decide when their college careers end and leave their coaches that gave them scholarships to play for them for their full seasons to leave them and their teammates hanging out to dry?
No, it doesn't concern me. I think first and foremost, because I don't see that happening. I know that was and you're not the only one who's voiced that concern.
Yeah.
And I think it's a valid one. I don't foresee sort of a large group of players making that decision to either forego seasons or forego, like, stop playing it toward the end of the regular season when it looks like you have nothing left to play for. But if it did happen, you know, like, I'm not going to be banging my fist on the table saying this is wrong because the system is kind of screwed to begin with. When you, like, the NFL gets a free minor league, college athletes aren't paid, college football players have one route to get to the NFL, and that's playing college football, where on the flip side, you look at basketball, where guys have an opportunity to make money. They don't have to go to college. They can go play overseas if they want to. There's no overseas football league, so it's either you play college football or you just work out for 3 years and hope that someone drafts you, which is not going to happen. So you have to play. If you think that you've done enough in a year or two to show that you're a player who's a first round draft pick and you don't want to sacrifice your body again for that third year, the quality of the college game might suffer. But again, I'm not going to hold guys at fault for that because it's their decision. And then if they're an opportunity to make money, go make your money.
Yeah, and the quality of the college game will suffer. Make no mistake about it. Especially if guys, because remember, this started really about 4 years ago, wasn't it? That Jadeveon Clowney wasn't going to play his junior season because he didn't want to get hurt, and he was already going to be the freak, you know, first pick of the draft, blah blah blah. And of course, he entertained that idea, but then he went and played. Then he missed a bunch of games though because something doesn't feel right, and he's just overly concerned about his body. And come to find out, maybe there's some reason for that, by the way, because he's been injured in the NFL and very, very ineffective compared to where he was supposed to be. But all it took was for somebody to kind of start talking about that, and now here we are. And I think it is starting with the bowl game. It'll kind of move itself further up into the late part of the schedule until you see exactly what you just described. You know, an All-American player in their freshman, sophomore year saying, I'm not playing my junior year. I'm just going to work out. I already know where my status is, and I'm not even going to play. And now we get the college football version of the NFL's, or the NBA's, or excuse me, college football version of the NCAA's college basketball one-and-done situation where you're recruiting guys for just 2 years knowing they're not even going to play beyond that.
Well, the thing, I mean, yeah, exactly. And it's a weird thing. The thing I would like to see maybe as it pertains to college football is maybe make the change to college basketball made recently where you can submit your name for the draft and get evaluated and return and not be penalized and still have your college eligibility. And I think maybe that would cut down on some of this, a little bit, because guys want to go to the NFL, and there are guys certainly who have unrealistic expectations of going to the NFL. But now in college basketball, if you're a guy who you think might be a prospect, you can go and get evaluated, maybe go to the combine, and even go to the combine and come back. Imagine if you could do that in the NFL. How many guys might come back and play college football after going to the combine and getting
That's really not a bad idea, although I don't know that it would certainly change anything in this case, you know, because nothing that Leonard Fournette, for example, is going to do at the combine is going to change his draft stock. It's going to be based on what they've already seen. Same thing with a guy like McCaffrey, you know, but
right.
For some guys, you know, who might be bubble guys as far as first or second round versus fourth or fifth round, and it could impact their status and the amount of money they make in a rookie deal. You're right. It could certainly help. Bill Landis is our guest with Cleveland.com, the Northeast Media Group. He covers the Ohio State Buckeyes. Jim Cushlin is here as well. Cush has one for you, Bill. Go ahead, Jim.
You know, and thinking about all this, and I think there's a lot of moving parts into this, and one of them is just the ridiculousness of the bowl season itself. I mean, not just the fact that we have the playoff, but let's put it this way, guys. There were multiple 5-7 teams that went to bowl games this year because they didn't have enough eligible teams to actually fill these slots. Do either of you think that maybe reducing the number of bowl games? I did a little experiment a couple weeks ago thinking about this, where if you made bowl eligibility 8 wins, i.e. 8-4, you could actually cut the bowl season in half from 40 games, which it is right now, to 20. Would that help in any way?
Yeah, probably. The thing about cutting bowl games, and I agree, there are a lot, and there are too many. Those are 40, 41 if you include the national championship. That's a lot, and it's probably too many. It's the money aspect of the whole thing. You know, think about the Sun Bowl. So North Carolina's playing Stanford. The Sun Bowl didn't happen, and the city of El Paso suffered because of that. And it's not like they're getting a huge boost, but they're getting a little bit. And there's local businesses that make money off the Sun Bowl, so it's important to that community. So those are the things that I think people lose sight of when they talk about canceling bowls. But I think it's more important, I guess, the health and and welfare of the athlete. So you think it's not worth putting a team that's 5-7 into another football game just for the sake of some local businesses and some bowl people making money. I think I'd agree with that.
What if it was bigger than the Sun Bowl? What if it was bigger than what we're talking about here? What if, for example, you know, Zeke knew where he was going to go next year. So did Bosa. So did probably Eli Apple. You know, all these guys ended up being, they had, what, 4 first-round picks in the draft last year. What if those guys had all said, you know what, I know where my money lies, Coach Meyer, and I'm not playing. I'm not playing against Notre Dame. It's not for the championship like it was last year when we were in the playoffs. This is just for fun, and this is just to make money for the university, and my money's waiting for me in the NFL. What if those three guys had sat it out? What would that do to college football?
I mean, the Fiesta Bowl would have been less entertaining, but again, because I feel the same way about that I do about Fournette and McCaffrey. Those are guys who were no doubt first-round picks, and if they felt going into that game that they want to put their body on the line, then they're well within their rights to do that. Now, they didn't do it, and the Fiesta Bowl was a good game for Ohio State fans, and Ohio State played very well because those guys were around, with the exception of Bosa, because he got ejected early. But if those guys, and I know Zeke Elliott came out and said, I would have given anything to play one more game with my guys, and I don't think any of these players who are coming out and saying these things are being disingenuous, but I also think it's very easy to say it in hindsight. So if I think people get a little too high on the horse with this, and just because you don't like it or it makes college football worse doesn't mean those guys are wrong for making that decision. I think there's room for both sides to be right here.
Yeah, well, there's no doubt about it. I think all of those things are true. You know, I'm sure the guys feel right about wanting to make their money, but it does make college football worse. It does make those games worse. It does make the ratings lower, and all of those who have spent money to make this whole thing happen, because it is all a symbiotic relationship, everybody helping one another to make all of this happen. And so there are going to be negative impacts about it on everybody pretty much except for the kids who decide to go ahead and play in the NFL or to skip their bowl games. Good stuff, Bill. Really appreciate the back and forth. I love the insight that you bring to it. You bring some really different perspectives than we had thus far on the conversation. So thanks for that. Hope you have a Merry Christmas, and we'll talk to you again sometime next year.
Sounds good. Same to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. There you go. Bill Landis joining us from the Northeast Ohio Media Group. He covers the Ohio State Buckeyes for a living. And we'll get to, you know, we got to get him back on maybe after the the semifinal game, I should say, between the Buckeyes and Clemson, although we have Paul Kuehls to talk to about that, too. All right, here's what we're going to do. Take time out. We do have some other things to get into, but this one still is top of mind for me. I heard Bill Landis loud and clear. He and I disagree. He and I disagree, especially because he says because the players aren't getting paid anything. I completely 150,000% disagree with that because I know what college student loans are all about. I know how much money it costs to go to school. I know how much money it costs to pay for your books and to pay for your meals and to pay for your rent or your dorm. I know. And I had to fork it out of my pocket, and then I had to pay student loan bills for a long, long time after that. You probably know, too. Jim Cushlin, you probably walked out of Virginia Tech with quite a few bills that you're probably still paying on. Am I right or wrong?
Yeah, pretty much right.
There you go. And don't tell me that Christian McCaffrey didn't get paid while he was at Stanford. Because he doesn't have any of those things as he's on his way to the NFL. They get paid plenty for their efforts. And you know what they're supposed to provide in exchange for those payments? All of their efforts during the season. Not one game short because, well, I want to work out for the draft. Got a problem with it. Bill disagrees, and that's fine. He made some great points. Tell me if you agree with him or me. And, Kush, I don't know what side of this you're on because you've been kind of waffling all over the place here. We'll hear maybe something more definitive from you on the other side as well. 4 o'clock time for your Sports Center. Back with more of your calls at 866-240-1065 after this on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
I mean, at the end of the day, you have to respect those guys' decisions, but you still have to – it has its ups and downs. You have to look at it like, you know, your teammates are really counting on you. And, you know, you want to be there for them or, you know, you're trying to secure your future. But if I had to do it all over again, I would play again. I'm not going to even sit here and lie to you. I would still play in the game.
Those two guys especially are unassailable in this decision because they're running backs who played much of the year in the case of McCaffrey or all of the year in the case of Fournette with leg injuries. And so the fact that they fought through those injuries for their teams when they were in conference and national races means that if they think that they need to take this bowl game off, I'm fine with it. Now, if they were healthy, I think players have to be careful about sitting out a bowl game when they're healthy because that might be sending a message to NFL teams that they don't love the game. Guys that love the game have to be dragged off the field.
understand what's most concerning about what happened out there.
That we got crushed at both ends.
Coming off a team meeting and all of the...
Like I said before, that stuff means nothing. It's what you do on the court. Talking's easy. I have nothing to say. I mean, it was a disgusting performance by all of us, me included. I mean, it was unprofessional, embarrassing, humiliating, whatever you want to say. It was terrible. When we went into the Washington game on Friday night, we were the number two defensive team in the league. And now we have three games where we can't stop anybody. I don't have an explanation for that.
It's unacceptable the way we're playing right now. You know, taking 30-point losses night after night. You know, this is not the team that I know that we are. It's tough, man. It's tough to be a part of. Tough to play in the game. Tough to watch. She can't even give you a legit answer to that question. It's just really hard to be a part of this type of situation that we're in.
We're beaten, but we need to wake up soon. We talked about how we needed to play defense, how the ball needed to hop. I guess ball movement and promote defense. So I've just tried to help do my part, but unfortunately, we just didn't do anything on defense.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Onward we roll into hour number two at 4:11. Thanks so much for being a part of our chat this Tuesday afternoon. Really good conversation with Bill Landis of the Ohio State Buckeye beat, talking about players leaving early before their bowl games to get ready for the draft, essentially to not get injured, and whether or not they are kind of in violation. Maybe there's an answer, by the way, to that. We'll get back into it later because we're going to shift gears to the NBA now. But maybe the answer to that is money. Maybe it is money. We talked about how much money they make by way of scholarship. How about you either play what you agree to play when we give you that scholarship, or every game that you don't play when you are healthy because you choose to leave early, you got to pay back. Room, board, tuition, everything, you know, on a prorated basis. Or, you know, we'll divide the entire cost up into 12 games of the season, and you pay back what you don't play. Maybe something like that could be worked out. We'll get back into that in a bit. But I do want to shift gears. You just heard a very, very angry Stan Van Gundy at the end of the montage there at the top of the hour put together by Mr. Jim Cushlin, and with very good reason. Pistons are not playing good basketball. The Pistons, in fact, are playing uninspired basketball. They, in fact, are, according to Aaron McMahon and the NBA Power Rankings at MLive.com, into the bottom half of the NBA's Power Rankings. And Aaron joins us now to talk about what's going on and what's going wrong with the Detroit Pistons. Aaron, how are you this afternoon?
I'm good, Bob. Good to be with you guys again.
It is always good to talk with you. We appreciate it when you get a chance. So Stan called it a disgusting performance. Team meetings, that's enough of that crap. That stuff doesn't do anything. It's what you do on the court, not what you do in meetings, et cetera. What has set him off to this level? I mean, he's never a quiet guy or a shy guy. He's very outspoken. He wears his emotions on his sleeve, but he's wearing his rage on his sleeve right now.
Yeah, he's about as boiling hot as I've heard here in the last 2 years on the beat. And to be honest, I wasn't too surprised. You know, this is a Pistons team that's reeling right now. Both, you know, defensively, and it's kind of translated in the offensive end. You know, they've lost three straight, four of their last five. They can't seem to put it together on really either end of the court. You know, this is a team that's played pretty well defensively this year. I mean, they're a top 10 team defensively in the NBA. They're getting better offensively. But they've really struggled here in this last nine game stretch with Reggie Jackson back. And I think part of it's the acclimation process, the 3-6. I was crunching the numbers last night with Jackson back. Mm-hmm. Pistons are 3-6. They're averaging about 93 points per game, which is dead last in the NBA. And with the starters on the court, they're minus 6.5 points per game, which is 29th out of 30th in the NBA. So the starters just aren't getting it done. And it's a combination, I think, of Reggie coming back and guys not being able to acclimate to that.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's beyond comprehension, really. I mean, everybody talked, and they held their own. I don't know, they certainly weren't one of the best teams in the NBA, but they held their own for the most part. Don't you agree, when Reggie Jackson was down and getting ready to start his season? And then it was just a matter of, hey, when he comes back, there might be a rust period for him, as he's not going to have his sea legs quite under him yet the way the other guys will, but they'll work him back in, and it'll just add to what was already a decent start. And instead, it's gone the other direction. It's beyond comprehension. It doesn't make any sense. It's kind of it's the opposite of what you would expect would happen when a guy with his ability returns. To what do you attribute that?
You know, I think they're kind of getting in a groove right before Reggie got back. For those that maybe weren't paying attention or watching, but the Pistons, I think, had won three straight right before Reggie came back. They were starting to acclimate to Ish Smith. Ishii and Reggie are two different point guards. You know, Reggie has to have the ball in his hands. He likes getting shots up, whereas, you know, Ishii is more of a distributor. He's looking for players. He's looking for teammates to get the ball to. So you're playing with two different guys at two different speeds, and I think they're just starting to get used to playing with Ishii. You know, they're playing well. He was getting comfortable, and then you throw in Reggie, and it disrupts the chemistry going on. You know, and that's where I think you've seen some of the struggles with them. You know, the Pistons relied heavily with Reggie out on their wings. You know, they were getting Marcus Morris more involved, Tobias Harris more involved, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope more involved. Now with Reggie coming back, you know, he demands the ball more, touch-wise, shots-wise. And with Reggie trying to get his stamina and his conditioning back, he needs to get those shots. So I think you're seeing some guys frustrated or not getting the ball more like they were used to at the beginning of the season. And I think that's been the root of the problem offensively. Stan Van Gundy's brought this up now here a couple times in the last week or so. Those struggles offensively, those frustrations on the offensive end have translated on defense. The guys aren't getting the ball and they don't want to play defense on the other end. And that's why you're seeing Washington put up 122 points the other night. You saw Chicago put up 113 last night. Mm-hmm. So it's really been a two-pronged issue.
So when you talk about, you know, Reggie Jackson and Ish Smith being very different kind of point guards, and that's obvious they are, and certainly Reggie is a scoring point guard. He's a guy who should be and has been a scoring point guard. How does he not take shots then? I mean, what's behind the exactly what was it, about 4 minutes ago in the second quarter before he took his first shot against the Bulls? So, you know, and then he only shot five times in the game. What's the story there? What is the reason for that? Is he trying to prove a point?
You know, that's a good question, and if you talk to Reggie, you know, he'll say no. We asked Stan about that. He said no. Stan, in fact, today after practice said Reggie kind of feels burned. You know, he's coming back. You know, this team is obviously on his shoulders to some degree. And he's still struggling. He's still scuffling. You know, he's trying to find his legs. He's still trying to find a shot. He's only shooting about 38% from the floor. I think that's going to come in time. But there were a few games there. He was chucking up a lot of shots. And guys were, like I said, guys were upset they weren't getting the ball. They felt like they were open and they should have gotten the ball. So it's been a double-edged sword. You know, they've got to get Reggie back, but at the same time, guys are feeling left out. And I think, and Stan brought this up after practice day too, but guys, he basically gave them the message, you got to suck it up and get this done. You know, this is a unit that played well during the second half of the season last year. You know, if you remember, it led them to the playoffs. It got them into the playoffs. And there was some, you know, assumption that they'd be able to repeat that again this year. So far, you know, with Reggie back, they haven't been able to do that. And in regards to yesterday, you know, I think Reggie was trying to, we spoke to him after the game, and he made a point of saying, you know, I was just trying to distribute the basketball. That's what they want me to do. And that's what I was trying to do. And he did, obviously.
That's what makes me wonder if he was trying to make a point. You know, I mean, when he says that's what they wanted me to do, is, in other words, has he been told by Stan or anybody else, hey, you know what, you got to stop being ball dominant, you got to stop shooting so much, share the ball? Is that what this was? Was this, okay, you don't want me to shoot? I won't shoot. I mean, I'm going to make a statement here. I know they both denied it, but that comment is kind of a tip-off.
Yeah, you know, to my knowledge, no, but you know, Reggie's a guy you want the ball in your hands. You want him taking those shots because, you know, while he's only shooting 30% from the floor, he's actually shooting pretty well from three. So he's got the scoring ability in him. You know, he's a guy that led the team in scoring last year, nearly 19 points a game. So, you know, for the offense to click, you've got to rely on him to some degree to take those shots. At the same time, when they aren't falling, you know, that's obviously when guys are getting frustrated and everything else. So I think it's just going to be a growing period right now. It's going to probably take another week or two, and it doesn't help if they've got a tough schedule coming up. The good thing they do have going for them is that the logjam in the Eastern Conference. There's 8 teams there within 2.5 games of one another. So I think that the Pistons can ride this out. You know, we may see some changes in the starting lineup. In fact, Stan Van Gundy said he will make changes. He hasn't specified those just yet. I think the Pistons will be able to hang in it.
30 games into the NBA season for the Pistons right now at 14-16. As we talk about their struggles with Aaron McMahon of MLive.com, Jim Kushlin is here as well. Jimmy, go ahead.
And, you know, I'm thinking of a lot of different things on this. And one of the things that keeps popping into my head, because it seems, Aaron, a lot of this has been happening, especially since Reggie Jackson came back. And you mentioned that, you know, there's been an adjustment period for Reggie and the rest of the team. But I almost wonder, one of those adjustments that's by default on the offensive end is that, when fully healthy, this is a team that loves the high pick and rolls with Reggie and Andre Drummond. Is it time to start not doing that as much and maybe alternating some of their offensive game plan?
Oh, yeah, there's definitely an argument there. And in fact, we've kind of discussed as media members whether maybe Stan's gone too much, too quickly to the pick and roll. Because, you know, teams know it's coming. You know, the Pistons did it often and often with success last year. So, you know, the teams have tape on it. They know what the Pistons are going to do. So yeah, there's definitely an argument, and maybe perhaps, you know, it's time for the Pistons to diversify their offense. I mean, and like I said earlier, they were able to do that some earlier this year, but I think you're still seeing guys in roles and pieces where, you know, they're still trying to fit here. You know, Tobias Harris, you know, was traded for last February. He's still relatively new in the organization and with the system. So I think you're starting to see guys, you know, you're going through that growing phase. I guess this these sophomore slump, so to speak. You know, guys, they've been together almost a full year now. You know, the results aren't, I guess, happening like they expected. And you're starting to see some pushback. So I think it's definitely time for them to figure some things out, make some changes, perhaps, you know, diversify the offense and look elsewhere. But yeah, I mean, that's something they'll have to look at. Absolutely.
We're talking NBA basketball, Piston style with Aaron McMahon. Stan Van Gundy essentially said that there's going to be some lineup changes coming. What are you expecting? What do you think he's going to tinker with here?
Yeah, you know, the obvious answer, and I've written this a couple times for the last few days, you know, off the bench is John Lewis. You know, he's a guy, he's been probably the most consistent player on this team all year. He's averaging 11.6 rebounds per game off the bench, both career highs. He's shooting pretty well. He's a relatively good defender, a good rebounder. So he's a guy that makes sense off the bench. But who goes to the bench, I think, is the question right now. You know, you've got Marcus Morris and Tobias Harris, two similar players, two guys who command the ball and like getting their shots up. You know, Tobias is highly paid. You know, Marcus is only on a $5 million a year contract. So if I had to guess in between one of those two guys, you know, I'm sure neither one of them wants to go to the bench. But you know, at this point, you know, Stan really doesn't have much of an option. And even Andre Drummond addressed this last night. You know, they don't have any other options. Drummond made the point that they're not looking to trade for anybody. They're not looking to acquire anybody. So they've got to make this work as it is. And so I think Lur to the starting lineup makes most sense. Who goes is the question. You know, if I had to guess right now, I'd say Marcus Morris just because of the value on this contract. He's not making a ton of money. He at this point in the year, I would say he's probably the team leader. He understands a move like this might be beneficial long term. But we'll have to wait and see. You know, we asked Van Gundy after practice today. He knew which way he was going, but he wouldn't tell us in the media. He says we're going to find out tomorrow night against Memphis.
You know, he obviously made the comment there at the beginning. In fact, Kush, can you play Stan again there? Let me know when you have that ready. His rampage there, especially about the team meeting part. Go ahead and play that again for Aaron.
Stan, what's most concerning about what happened out there?
That we got crushed at both ends.
Coming off a team meeting and all of the...
Like I said before, that stuff means nothing. It's what you do on the court. Talking's easy. I have nothing to say. I mean, it was a disgusting performance by all of us, me included. I mean, it was unprofessional, embarrassing, humiliating, whatever you want to say. It was terrible. When we went into the Washington game on Friday night, we were the number two defensive team in the league. And now we have three games where we can't stop anybody. I don't have an explanation for that.
Okay, that's good enough. So, Aaron, I mean... A lot of teams obviously will have team meetings and players only. Was this one a players only team meeting?
It was, yes. They called it Saturday night after they lost Indiana.
A lot of teams will do that, and they just need to, you know, talk to one another and clear the air, as it were, without the coaches being around and you know, exerting their influence and their authority. This is just us, and you know what? You know, a lot of coaches find value in that. A lot of coaches say, hey, you know, that's good. I'm glad to see these leaders of the team calling these meetings and trying to find a way to hold one another accountable. We're not their parents, you know, as coaches. They've got to find a way to be grown men and do this. A lot of coaches feel that way. He just demolished the entire notion of players-only meetings, saying enough of that crap. It's about what you do on the floor, not what you do in a meeting room. He just essentially said, you know what, yeah, the hell with you know, your attempt to find internal solutions to your problems from among the roster. Just do things the way I want you to do them. Do you think that will have an impact on the way the players, you know, kind of view their own relationships with one another, and more importantly, with Stan Van Gundy, since he pretty much destroyed the idea of players-only meetings?
You know, that's a good question, and something that's been posted here in the last few days. In fact, we asked him at practice today about, you know, if he's worried about his team's psyche. And he kind of doubled down. His message to the team today at practice was to do your job. Don't worry about anything else. Don't worry about, you know, what could be or what the problems are. Do what you're supposed to do. You know, Stan's a guy who doesn't like the rah-rah stuff. He doesn't go in a locker room and yell and scream and throw chalk, but he doesn't believe in that stuff. You know, he believes with leadership, leadership comes on the court, you know, by example. In fact, we kind of asked him about the team meeting yesterday in Chicago before the game, and he basically said the same message without the extreme terms. You know, he said, you know, that's great and all. You know, team meetings are great and all for communication, and he thinks that's great, but at the end of the day, you got to get on the court and do your job and win basketball games. And if that doesn't happen, you know, all the team, you can do team meetings all day, and it's all, you know, basically for show.
Aaron McMahon of MLive.com covering the Detroit Pistons. Let me ask you one more. You talked about that glut of about eight teams all within 2.5 games of one another. How do you size up the Pistons as currently the way they're currently playing? And maybe it's wrong to say they're currently playing because they're in the middle of that losing streak. But just on where they are through 30 games, are they closer to the top of that glut and thus going to push as the season goes on for a playoff spot, particularly a middle of the pack playoff spot where maybe they even get as high as four and get home in the first round? Or are they, you know, is this one of the teams that's going to be at the bottom of that glut?
You know, as of right now, you know, with the way they're playing, obviously, I'd have to say they're at the bottom of that glut. Mm-hmm. But that being said, and Stan mentioned it today in practice, we asked him about it as well. You know, if you go through nearly every team in that log jam has gone through, you know, situations like these. You know, Atlanta was on a long losing streak. Charlotte has two separate four-game losing skids. Some of these teams have gone through situations like these. So I think if the Pistons can get through this, and I really think they will, you know, the talent on this team is too good. You know, they're still outscoring opponents. I think their point differential is around plus three. So they're still scoring points. They just got to put it together. And I think, you know, if you're going to go through something like this during the season, I think you'd rather do it in the first half as opposed to the second half. So I think if they can figure out this starting lineup situation, you know, play some 500 ball here up until the All-Star break, I think they'll be fine. You know, I still think playoffs are a near certainty for this team. They're too talented not to get in. Now, where they fall after that remains to be seen. And I can see, you know, maybe upwards of, you know, a fourth or fifth seed, but right now I'd say they're near the bottom of the top eight.
Yeah. By the way, their point differential after the Chicago game is down to plus 0.9 now, from plus three to plus less than a full point. Just to throw that at you. Last thing on it then, and I may have lost my place since I gave you that. I'm trying to remember the last thing you just said. Was it just the place where they said? Oh, I remember.
Yeah,
I asked you at 14 and 16. I was just noticing the fact that they've played 30 games already. And, for example, the team at the top of the conference, Cavaliers, have played just 25. Is it a particularly heavy schedule in the early going here that might be weighing on the Pistons at all, or does that really not matter? I mean, obviously everybody plays 82. That's five more games than the team at the top of the division or the top of the conference.
Yeah, and that's been a topic that's kind of come up here in the last few weeks. You know, Stan mentioned it, I think outright mentioned it without even being asked about it a few weeks back, that, you know, they were playing a game-heavy schedule. In fact, last week was the first time they had, before their last road trip, they had their first back-to-back practices for the first time since the regular season started. So they haven't had a ton of practice time, which I think has hurt them a little bit in terms of, you know, maybe developing some of these guys or maybe gelling this starting five. So absolutely, I think that's had an impact. You know, their second half is much, much easier than the first in terms of, you know, days off and spacing between games and stuff. So that should help, absolutely. At the end of the day, it's going to come down to how this starting five, handles itself and how this team, gels or in fact, you know, implodes. I guess remains to be seen.
Yeah, I guess that's a fair way to say it. Really good stuff, as always. Good analysis from Aaron McMahon whenever he visits with us right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, talking about the Detroit Pistons from the pages or from the online pages of MLive.com. Aaron, thanks for the time, and since we will not talk to you until at the earliest next week, have a wonderful Christmas and holiday weekend, and we look forward to chatting up with you again.
Absolutely, Bob. Thanks to you and to your listeners. Merry Christmas.
Thanks so much. There you go. Aaron McMahon joining us once again, talking Pistons basketball right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Yeah, it's kind of a wreck right now. I don't know. you know, Stan isn't rah-rah, as he said, as Aaron just said. Stan is not a rah-rah guy. I get that. But just destroying the concept, essentially, of players-only meetings a lot. And I'm not saying he's wrong. I'm just saying that, you know, a lot of coaches look for players, leaders, veteran players, to stand up and lead, to stand up and say, you know, we're not relying on the coach for everything. Let's get through this ourselves. Let's talk about it. Let's hold each other accountable. A lot of people like that. And I kind of do too. I mean, depending on who's doing it and whether or not it's for show, right? Because a lot of guys just want to, you know, be look like they're leading by example, et cetera. But Stan killed it. He said, you know what? Screw that. These stupid meetings. Doesn't mean anything. Just get out there and play. And I'm not sure how that's going to play with his players. I mean, you know, most players really like playing for Stan Van Gundy, but I got to tell you, this isn't one of those things that I think they'll necessarily agree with.
Stan, what's most concerning about what happened out there?
That we got crushed at both ends.
Coming off a team meeting and all of the...
Like I said before, that stuff means nothing. It's what you do on the court.
Team meeting my A. It's what you do on the court. Team meetings mean nothing. I got to tell you, I'm not saying he's wrong. I'm just saying it might not play well when you try to, you know, blend these guys together with their coach. All right, let me get a quick timeout here. Bottom of the hour, Sports Center coming your way. We're going to talk to Bob Ibach coming up in a few minutes. Another great memorabilia item that's going to be helping charity, and it's going to be commemorating the Ohio State Buckeyes playing in the semifinals, at least, of the championship playoffs right now. And we're going to give you an opportunity to win one of those things, by the way. And then we're going to take some of your phone calls as well as we go back to the issue of college players. They are getting paid, in my estimation, by way of everything they receive from universities. Don't they owe it to the university, to the head coach and their teammates to play in their bowl games? Because at least two high-profile stars say no. All of that coming up as we continue on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Now, back to Bob France, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
And indeed, we roll onward at 4:37. We'll take until 5 o'clock drive time with Mr. Miller coming up at 5. Right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Thanks again to Aaron McMahon talking NBA hoops with us, Piston style. Thanks also to Bill Landis, the half hour before that, on all things college football, including players skipping out on their bowl games to save themselves for the NFL draft. Is it the right thing to do, and what kind of a trend is that going to start? We'll get back to that conversation after we interrupt it for just a moment or two to welcome Bob Ibach back to the program. Bob Ibach is the former Chicago Cubs PR director who has been instrumental in putting together some wonderful memorabilia, championship memorabilia together in part to raise money for charity. He's been donating some of this memorabilia to you as our listeners, and all he wants in return is your attention as we try to help out some people in need, especially at this time of the year. And now we're focusing our attention on the Ohio State Buckeyes, who are back in the national championship hunt in the Final Four and playing in the national semifinal game coming up at the end of this year. Bob Ibach, welcome back to the program. Good to have you.
Hey, Bob, nice to be with you again. And, yeah, I can't wait to see. I think the best game of the two is going to be that game on December 31st, certainly against Clemson. I think that's going to be a very interesting slugfest there. So I'm looking to see what the Buckeyes can do. And as I mentioned to you off the air, we're doing something really, really nice for Buckeyes fans to celebrate being in the college football playoffs. I know they won the title 2 years ago, and now they're going after their ninth national title and their first since 2014. And what we have for Buckeye fans, and you can get this in time for Christmas, when I'll kind of indicate how you can do that as a gift idea. Okay. In a moment, I'll give out a toll-free number and a website. But Wilson's producing 5,000 of these officially licensed playoff footballs, college football playoff footballs for the Buckeye fans. And it benefits Extra Yard for Teachers, which is the official charity of the NCAA football playoff for the third straight year. And these will get some really cool things done for teachers, not only recognition programs, but the monies from the sale of these 5,000 Ohio State footballs will also generate some educational opportunities as well as publicity opportunities where teachers, not the ball players, but teachers will be featured on radio shows, on television, in newspapers, as kind of heroes. And just everybody knows that, you know, you've had probably a teacher in your life that has meant a lot to you. Well, now this is a great way to give them some recognition and at the same time own something very historic. Now, these are footballs are priced at just $99. They come with a very handsome acrylic display case, a number certificate of authenticity. You can put them in your office or home. And on the Ohio State football, we'll have all the official logos, the school logo, the playoffs logo. One section of the ball, Bob, lists in chronological order the 11-1 season to date, heading into that semifinal game on December 31st against Clemson. Game by game, the opponent, date, final score. So it's a really nice recap of the season. We'll continue to add on. If the Buckeyes go ahead and win that game, we will add on for the national championship game on January 9th down at Tampa against the winner of the Washington-Alabama game. Now, also, before I give out that number, I do want to point out on the ball, we'll have a little history about there the 81 football All-Americans that the Ohio State Buckeyes have had over the year. We're going to list the 8 previous national championships for the Buckeyes on this ball, and it's a really slick-looking football. So when you go to the website that I'm going to give out, you'll be able to see it there, and I think you'll agree with me. This is a really must-have. It's the toll-free number, Bob, that people can order these. And, again, only 5,000 will ever be made. So these aren't being sold at the school. You can't get them at retail stores. They're only selling them to get monies raised for Extra Yard for teachers. You can call today at 1-800-345-2868. That's toll-free, 1-800-345-2868. You can also go to the website, see the football there, NICOSports.com, NICOSports.com. You can order it online. If you go to the left-hand corner on the website, you'll see a little button there which allows you to download a Christmas card or holiday gift card instantly, print it out on your computer with a picture of the football, put it under the Christmas tree, put it in the stocking, and let the folks know who's going to get this. You'll get it in 6 weeks after the Buckeyes play their final game. So we're hoping that won't be till January the 9th. That means they're in the national championship game.
So how do you see that, Bob, before we give that number out again and talk about what's on that ball? And I'm looking at a picture of it right now. I love it. Before we do that, you said that the Ohio State-Clemson game is going to be the better of the two. Will it be the best of the three? And what I mean by that is I don't think there's any question Alabama is going to handle Washington relatively easily. And I think Ohio State can beat Clemson as well, which takes us to the hypothetical Ohio State and Alabama matchup again. Nick Saban, Urban Meyer, we know they have battled each other in high-stakes championship games before. How do you see that if it comes down to it? What's your call?
Well, the edge for the Buckeyes, if they survive, you know, against Clemson, is I think overall the competition in the Big Ten was far superior than what Clemson faced in the ACC. Clemson had some sloppy wins at times. But I think the matchups, they have a pretty stacked offensive team, and that's what you're going to need to outscore Alabama. Alabama's got a terrific, terrific defensive team. I have to really believe that the winner of the Clemson, Ohio State game, certainly will be an underdog to Alabama. However, I think each team presents a different difficulty for the Crimson Tide. I'd say if either Ohio State or Clemson were to play Alabama, okay, they have in my opinion, you play 10 games. I think either Ohio State or Clemson could win easily 3 of the 10 games. Now, do they show up, you know, in Tampa and they play their A game and maybe a couple things go wrong for Alabama? That's why they play the games. I don't discount the Buckeyes from being able to win the national championship, because if they beat Clemson, they'll be on a high, and you just never know. But it's going to be a tough road. I mean, obviously, Alabama is in a class a little bit above everybody in this field right now, in my opinion. So, and Nick Saban is like a machine down there. I mean, the guy has won, you know, 5 titles, I think, and they've got 16 under their hat down in Tuscaloosa. So I think it's going to be – I'm excited, you know. And, I don't want to diss Washington either, you know. They've got an interesting ball club. I just don't think on a year-round basis they play the competition that will get them ready for this kind of a game.
Yeah, they're not going to be tested. They're not going to be ready for the kind of pressure that Alabama can put on them in all ways. And I mean that literally and literally on the field with that front 7 and then figuratively as well, just because Washington has not played that kind of a schedule. The Pac-12 has not been strong.
No.
All right. Bob, let's hit this again. Let's hit the number again. And then also what interested me is we are obviously 5 days away from Christmas. If somebody is interested in purchasing this Ohio State memorabilia collector's football for $99 with the display case, what do they do to have something to wrap up and put under the or in the stocking this year?
Sure. They can call right today as we're talking, 1-800-345-2868. Again, that's toll-free, 1-800-345-2868. $99 gets you the football for Ohio State. It's a classic, full size. It comes with that handsome acrylic display case, which really makes it pop when you put it in there. Or you can go right to the website, nicosports.com, N-I-K-C-O-sports.com. You can order it off the website, and whether you call or whether you order it off the website, you can download a special gift card, a Christmas card, a holiday card, print it out instantly, and then that way you can give it out as a Christmas or holiday gift idea. Stick it in the stocking, put it under the tree, you've done your shopping, and if you're somebody who is a Buckeyes fan and you collect memorabilia to put in your man cave or another part of your office or whatever, this is a really, really special football.
On the mantle in front of your wedding picture.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. Bye-bye, Ibaka. Thanks.
We're getting calls. We're getting calls coming in right now. I can hear them in the background.
I like that. I like to hear that. And, again, helping the charity as well, Extra Yard for Teachers. We always got to make sure people know there's a great reason to get this in addition to having your own collector's item, but you are also contributing to a wonderful charity. Bob Ibach, thank you so much for the time. We appreciate it. Hey, Bob, you do have an extra one of those lying around, right, for a lucky winner right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket?
I certainly do. I'll be sending that your way, and I know the folks in the Toledo area will enjoy it. And you know, enjoy the Christmas season too coming up. I want everybody in the audience. I know you guys have helped us out a lot in the past, and we've raised almost $2.5 million in recent years for a lot of charities: Boys and Girls Club, Make-A-Wish Foundation, and now the Extra Yard for Teachers. And I want to send out a big shout out to your listening audience for being part of that. And I wish everybody a Merry Christmas and a happy holiday season and certainly a safe and happy, healthy new year coming up.
And the same thing to you, Bob. God bless and Merry Christmas and happy holidays to you. Before you go, do one thing for me. Give me a number, if you would. Tell me what caller is going to take this Ohio State commemorative football away.
I'm going to give you my favorite number. It was my dad's favorite number, and it goes back to my years in New York City when I was growing up in the Bronx. My favorite ball player at the time, number 7. Mickey Mantle.
Mickey Mantle, number 7. I like it a lot. Good stuff, Bob Ibach. Thank you so much, my friend.
Okay, you have a great day now, Bob.
You got it. Bob has made the call. Now, the number he gave is how you order one of those. The number I'm going to give you is how you win this one right now, and that's going to be caller number 7 to 866-240-1065. Our normal call-in line, 866-240-1065. Call in now and be caller number 7, and you will indeed win that Ohio State football. Again, you won't get it for about 6 weeks, or until about 6 weeks after the Buckeyes' last game, whether that be in the semifinal game or whether it be the national championship. So there you go. Great stuff from Bob Ibach once again, and that'll be a commemorative item that you certainly are going to want to keep. All right. We only have a short while left. I want to also take phone calls, not just for contestants, I should say, but I want to take some phone calls here at the last couple of minutes of the show, if we have time to get them in. I know the phone lines are jammed up now with contestants. But going back to the issue of Christian McCaffrey and Leonard Fournette, we had a really, really compelling conversation, I think anyway, with Bill Landis, who covers the Ohio State Buckeyes.
How do you think coaches and
I don't want to hear you speak. I want to talk to, or I want to hear myself speak, and I want to talk to the callers. Thank you so much. Get that audio out of my ear. where was I? Oh, yeah. Bill Landis, who covers the Ohio State Buckeyes for the Northeast Ohio Media Group, very, very adamant that he has no problem whatsoever with Fournette, McCaffrey, other star players, from essentially saying, I quit. People don't like that. I'm sorry. I don't have any other way to say that. I think it's real. I think it's legit. I think it's accurate. But saying I quit on my teammates and on my coaches and on my team and on my obligation to the school and so on and so forth as they are headed to their bowl game. And bowl games, while they are not really meaningful and impactful in terms of championships, because if you don't make the Final Four, you're not part of the championships anymore, right? You know, championship consideration. Used to be the bowl games could be impactful when it was simply a vote of the Associated Press writers and UPI writers, and back in the day, the coaches as well. But since it's not a championship factor anymore, what is it? It is very simply an exhibition game, a post-game exhibition. Yet it is filled with reasons to be there and reasons to want to be successful for the coaches, for the players, to say that I was a Rose Bowl champion, I was a Sun Bowl champion, I was a Peach Bowl champion, or whatever the case might be. But also for the coaches on their resume, you know, he's been to 7 bowl games, he's won 6 of them, that means he can prepare and play to win the big games and the highest of brightest of lights, under the brightest of lights on the biggest of stages, etc. That kind of matters, at least to me it does. And I think to a lot of people, a lot of coaches, it does. But what they're doing to me, in my opinion, by saying we're not going to play in this bowl game is that I'm valuing my own self more than I am the school that gave me the opportunity to play and put on my show that is going to make me a multimillionaire at the next level. So for me, and Bill Landis's point was a simple one. If you missed the conversation, I'll have to summarize it for you. Bill Landis's point was, look, the players don't get paid. The coaches have million-dollar salaries in big-time Division I college football. The players don't get paid. Therefore, if they want to skip out on their coaches to go and prepare for the draft where they are going to get paid, you know, to prepare themselves to get paid at the next level anyway, he has no problem with that. My response to that is there is a huge payment that is made to every Division I scholarship football player and basketball player, and I'm talking to the tune of roughly $200,000 over a 4-year period. Now, if you don't stay 4 years, that number obviously goes down, you know, proportionally. But maybe it's 160, maybe it's 120,000, whatever the case might be. But it's a very, very valuable thing that you get when you get a full scholarship that includes room, board, meals, clothing, et cetera, from your club. So since all of that is granted to them at the college's expense in exchange for their labors on the football field, if they choose not to labor in the bowl game that brings much of the money in, you know, many of the millions in, so that the next generation of players can get their scholarships, then to me, why don't we solve this and solve the dispute between myself and the likes of Bill and others who think this is...
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.